Hi, and welcome to Deep Dive with Jamie Stein, where we take a deep dive look at all things reality TV, pop culture, and the world at large. I'm an intuitive and an empath, which means I pick up on the thoughts, feelings, and energy percolating in other people and the world around me. I believe there is meaning waiting to be found at every turn if you're willing to see it. So join me as we dismantle everything from trash TV to high spiritual concepts and learn more about ourselves, each other, and how we're all connected. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with Jamie Stein. I am your host, Jamie Stein, and I'm coming to you today with another little solo episode. This is actually going to be a bit of a follow-up episode to my conversation with my good friend and good friend of the pod, Kirsten McMillan, a few episodes back, where we looked at season 11 of Vanderpump Rules through an archetypal lens. Got a lot of really great, generous feedback from you guys about loving the episode. And in particular, I definitely heard a lot from people who appreciated getting a deeper, better understanding of Tom and what's going on with Tom and why it's so hard for him to take accountability for his actions. And also people who still really yearned to understand more about what's going on with him. And I really got the sense, as we all know, Scandoval has, from its very inception, really struck a nerve in the collective. And part of what I'm picking up on, at least in terms of my the feedback I'm getting and the one-on-one communication I have with listeners, is, like I said, people seem to be very disturbed by his lack of accountability, his seeming lack of remorse, the way in which he just won't fully take in or feel the impact of his actions on Ariana. And, you know, I want to say I understand this to a degree. I mean, I think that is something that can be very unsettling for all of us. And I think all of us probably have had some experience of that, of someone doing something that had a hurtful impact on us and then not really being willing to take in that impact on the other side. And in the case of Tom, I really experience him almost as like, it's almost like this, like I want to say like this blank page or this empty vessel. It just feels like there's something so hollow there where he won't take in what he's done. And in terms of the emotional devastation of being on the receiving end of that, I want to say that I've been feeling more and more just how devastating this must really be for Ariana. I know I've spoken on the podcast before about sort of up until recently not really being able to fully feel her. And I have to say that's really been shifting and changing for me as of late. I think a huge part of that probably has to do with her own relationship to this process. As Molly Durand and I talked about last episode, filming of this season happened so soon after this whole controversy broke. I think we're only 3 months into it. And I really have a deepened empathy, compassion, and understanding for the situation that Ariana found herself in, that though, yes, this may not have been the perfect relationship, and yes, maybe there were red flags or whatnot that may have been ignored along the way, the fact of the matter is, regardless of all that, it's clear that Ariana was invested in this as a lifetime partner. And regardless of whether the relationship imploded or not, or even how it imploded, this was a man that she was in a deeply committed, serious relationship with for almost 10 years. And so I think when I take in the situation from her perspective and kind of on her behalf, it's just really taking in that this was an implosion that she did not see coming and that her world got rocked literally in an instant. And that so much of what she took for granted for her life was pulled out from underneath her. The rug got pulled out from underneath her. And again, not just that their relationship imploded and not even just that Tom cheated on her and cheated on her in such a, as we've explored, in such a over the top, to my mind, to my intuition, in such a vindictive, mean-spirited way. But then again, on the other side of it, not being willing to take in the impact of what he's done. And I can just kind of feel for Ariana how used she must feel that, you know, this was a man who at one point loved her. And again, they were in a committed, loving partnership together. And it's like something just turned in Tom. And when it turned hard. And I can imagine for Ariana being on the other side of that, looking at this guy, again, who not only deceived and betrayed her, but then on the other side of it, won't step into true emotional responsibility for his actions. I can imagine for her, again, just how devastating this must feel, how used she must feel, how discarded she must feel. And again, not just discarded, but discarded in a way where her whole life is now upended. And she, to her, per her description, at the time this all happened, she didn't have a lot of money. So even more so, I can imagine, not only is the relationship over, not only are there now logistics about home ownership and all things like that, but, you know, there's just so many kind of uncertain questions about where her life goes from here. And I can just kind of feel for her just how scary that must have been. Anyways, I'm getting into a little bit of a digression, but this all started because I was just sort of thinking about how soon into this process filming commenced on season 11. And I feel like what I'm watching happen with Ariana, it feels like we're watching in real time her getting more of her bearings, her sinking more deeply into this experience. And I think her getting more connected with her feelings around it. And I think it's interesting, you know, we're watching her get more engaged on the show. So she's gone from, you know, refusing to be at any of the same events with Tom to now showing up at events with Tom. She's gone from refusing to speak to him to actually engaging with him. There's something, that impulse in her that we were exploring last episode to maybe just kind of like have like a hard line that normally in real life would work, right? In real life, she'd be able to just essentially walk out on Tom and never have to see him or hear from him again. Obviously, that's not the case with the show. It becomes a little bit more difficult with going back to the show. But, you know, we see her shifting to letting herself get a little bit more into the mix. And we see, you know, her feelings are coming to the surface. We had that episode last week where she really tapped into a very, very powerful expression of her rage. That, by the way, is the rage and the life force that I talk about when I talk about experiencing Ariana as someone who just has these powerful currents of energy that want to move through her. I really felt it big time in that scene at James Kennedy's house. So anyways, this is all just to say, I feel like Ariana is coming more online in her emotional process in response to all this. It feels like she's getting more grounded in the reality of the situation. And I think as a result of that, I, as a viewer, am feeling her more now. And anyways, like I said, this was a bit of a digression, but it's all just to come back around to this notion, though, of I can, in terms of feeling her more deeply, part of what I'm feeling is this real sense of like devastation. And again, this feeling of being used and discarded as I'm standing across potentially from this guy who again, I was committed to for life, who I've been in love with for the last 10 years of my life. And he's done this insidious thing and it's just, he won't take it in. And I mean, even saying it, I can kind of like my heart is bracing for her. It's just, again, this feeling of like, I just feel like I've been so used here. And it feels like such a feeling of powerlessness. And it brings me back to what we explored last episode with Molly, this notion of like being left on the outside as a result of other people's bad behavior. So anyways, shifting this off Ariana for a moment, I feel like this is such a universal experience. I feel like in some ways so many of us, if not all of us, have at some point gone through an experience where someone has had an impact on us and then they refuse to feel it. And again, just that feeling of, it's almost like, I think, I often say this in my work with clients, I think the way that we get wounded, sure, that is painful enough. And a wound on its own is wounding. Having said that, I think as human beings, I think we're so resilient. I think we have such a deep capacity for healing. And I often think what's even more wounding isn't actually the wound itself, but it's when we don't have space to speak up and say, ouch, this hurt. When we don't have space to speak up and say, wait a second, something has happened here that's painful for me. I've been wounded. And when there's not space to be seen or heard in that way, when people are not willing to acknowledge and validate what's happened for us, when they're not willing to see and to validate the impact their actions have had on us, it's sort of like that to me feels like the real injury. Because I feel like by virtue of being human and by virtue of living in the world, we're always going to get wounded. We're always going to get hurt. I mean, it's just kind of a fact of life and relationship. I think usually even unintentionally, but sometimes intentionally, we get wounded, we get hurt. We can't avoid that. But I think when we have a learned experience that there's room, space, and permission for us to speak to our wounds, to speak to our hurt, for our hurt and our wounds to be seen, heard, witnessed, and acknowledged, well, then it's not so scary because it's like we can kind of ride with the tides of life, right? But if we don't trust that there is that space and we're going to get wounded, and then on top of that, no one's even going to be willing to hear, see, or hold space for our wounds, it's kind of like, again, I'm just, my heart is caving in even as I say that. To me, that's the real injury. It's just like, you don't even care enough to take in the impact this has had on me and the suffering that I'm in. And so I think that's where we really start to close down, because it's like, if we don't have that room to say, ouch, or to tend to the wound, well, then we better just pull away from life to make sure that we don't get wounded. So yes, I think having a sense that we are allowed to be in process with our wounds, to speak to our wounds, to have our wounds be witnessed, to have our wounds be validated in some way, I think it's a very big part of the healing process. And so, yeah, I think when someone has done something, again, that impacts us, and then they're not willing to take in our pain or the impact on the other side, to me, that's almost, like I said, the real devastating blow. And I think it creates a real sense of powerlessness, because I think there's kind of an embedded message there of, you are not worth feeling the impact of my actions. I don't care enough to know about the impact of my actions. And I think that's where we can kind of feel used, abused, and discarded. And so anyways, this is all just to say, I think this is why I'm receiving so much feedback from people in terms of feeling disturbed by Tom's lack of remorse and just not understanding it, not understanding how someone could do something so cruel and then not be willing to take true energetic, emotional responsibility for it. So having said all that, the reason why I'm doing this follow-up episode is that, yeah, I really wanted to kind of touch down on that a bit again, and specifically to touch down on it in a way that to me feels really simple and really clear. I had such an intention in that episode with Kirsten to really break down Tom's behavior into really simple, clear component parts. And I feel like there were certain ways that I got there, but then when I walked away from the episode, I just felt it. I was like, I didn't quite get to where I wanted to go with it. And of course, you know, once I recorded the podcast, it really got my mind and my thoughts churning. And once I walked away from recording, I was like, oh, that's how I wanted to talk about it. That's the really simple way I wanted to map this out. So given that I had that experience of really kind of finding the language for it after we stopped recording, and given that I heard from so many people wanting a deeper and better understanding of where Tom is coming from, I thought, why not just take this opportunity to jump on today and, like I said, do kind of a quicker solo episode where we really break this down into what I hope to be, like I said, very simple, clear component parts that can maybe give some context to Tom's behavior that we're seeing on screen. Now, for me, there are kind of two volumes or chapters or components to this. To me, there's kind of the historical explanation, like my intuitive sense or hunch or my intuitive hypothesis of the historical groundwork that set the template in Tom for what we're watching today. So there's the past, and then there is what we're watching today, which is how that past template, that past pattern is playing out in present-day circumstances. So for me, these are two almost separate but connected conversations. So for today, I'm just going to focus on the past, because again, I just have such a deep intention to just keep this as simple as possible for right now. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to come back with yet another follow-up episode where we map out how it plays in the present. So for now, just going with history, we're going with Tom's past. And this is kind of the way that I sense, intuit, frame Tom's present day behavior in terms of historical pattern. Okay. So having said that, let's jump into this. Okay, so keeping this as simple as possible, my sense of Tom all along has always been an inner conflict in him around what it means to be good and what it means to be bad, what it means to be a naughty boy. It makes me think of that. Remember those cartoons we would watch when we were younger where someone was like in a Faustian struggle in their heads, there'd be like an angel on one shoulder trying to guide him along the path of light and good behavior. And then there'd be the devil on the other shoulder trying to like lead him down the path of naughtiness. I mean, this is really how I experienced Tom, that there's a deep inner conflict in him in terms of what it means to be a good boy and what it means to be a bad boy. So I'm just going to say that up top. My experience of Tom on a fundamental level, again, kind of just breaking this down into the simplest language possible, is my sense of him is that this was a guy who early in his life, when he's a child, when he's a boy, he's a baby born into this world, he's a boy learning about life. At one point, Tom is good, right? As we all are. You know, this is operating from the premise that we're all born into this world healthy and whole. We have loving hearts. We're loving babies. We're loving children. And we have kind of our essence and our love and our creative energy that moves through us freely and willingly until we bump up against things in our outer lives and our families of origin and our culture that kind of start to cause us to get defended and to learn lessons about how we need to keep ourselves protected and safe and all this, that, and the other. So Tom, at one point, he comes into this world a good boy, let's say. And just hearkening back to my last episode with Kirsten, if we sort of go with what we were exploring in that episode, Tom is this boy with this big heart. He's got this Dionysus energy. He has a sort of love of his fellow man and his fellow woman. He's a performer. He's a magician. He's a creative little kid. He's got a lot of love in his heart. He's a good little boy, right? So here's Tom, good boy. And then what happens, again, just on the simplest level, he's a good kid who gets a message that there's something actually wrong with him. So Tom, as a good little boy, encounters a message from the outside world, Tom, there's something wrong with you. Tom, you're wrong for doing that. Tom, you're actually bad. A good kid who gets a message that he's actually bad. So just keeping it there on that simple level, my sense of Tom is that at that point, when he's a good boy who gets a message from the outside world that there's something wrong or bad about him, it's almost like his energy splits into two. So it's almost like if you imagine our life force energy running through us as a vertical column of energy that originates at the base of our spine, shoots through our head, right? It's just this, let's visualize it as like a column of light that moves through us, life force energy moving through us. It's like Tom had his life force energy that he experienced as good and healthy and whole. He gets a message that he's bad, and it's suddenly like that energy suddenly goes from being this strong, solid, singular column of light. It breaks off into two different directions. It's like a fork in the road. So on one side of the fork, one current of energy, one split pathway is the part of young Tom that is essentially pissed about this. It's the voice in Tom that wants to say, wait a second, what do you mean I'm bad? That's not true. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm good. I'm not bad. I'm good. It's the part of him that on some level knows this incoming message isn't true, that it's not fair, and that it doesn't feel good. Because as kids, I mean, we all know this, right? Kids have an innate wisdom. Kids are so intuitive. They're so connected to their hearts and their impulses because they just, you know, they've been born recently. They still have the fairy dust of source on them. They still haven't gotten deeply defended. You know, they haven't built up their defenses yet in response to life. They're kids. And as kids, we kind of know what feels true. We know what doesn't. We know what feels right. We know what doesn't. We have an innate knowing in us. So I have to imagine as Tom, on a psyche level, there's a part of him as a kid who's like, wait a second, this isn't fair, this isn't right, and I'm rightfully outraged about this message. There's a voice, there's an underground voice in me that's saying, there's nothing wrong with me, I'm not bad, I'm good, and I'm pissed about this, okay? So that's one current of energy. Then, on the other side, there's this other current of energy that's splitting off, and this is where things get complicated. So again, I'm just going to do my best to keep this as simple as possible. I think the other current of energy that suddenly splits off is the part of Tom that actually believes the message that's coming in about his badness. So on the one hand, you've got the part of him that is a deep inner knowing that this message isn't true. But then on the other hand, you have a part of him that actually internalizes the message. Because again, as kids, yes, we have innate wisdom, but we're also kids. We don't have agency in our lives. We don't have emotional maturity yet. We are raised in our family of origin, in our culture, in our schools. We believe what the adults tell us on a certain level. We have no counterpoint to argue it. These are the people that we depend on to learn about life, to learn about ourselves, to learn about how the world works. And we love these people. They are our caretakers. They are our caregivers. They are the people who we depend upon for survival. They are the ones who love us, feed us, and take care of us. So when they give us a message, there is a part of us that deeply internalizes it, right? So, and I'm, by the way, I'm sure everyone can relate to this. I'm sure we all internalize messages from our family of origin and the cultures that we grew up in that we later learned, oh, wait, that's not actually true for me. Like, I internalized a message that there was something wrong with me. I internalized a message that I was stupid compared to my brother, or that I was lazy just because I had a different learning style. You know, that's part of our work, I think, part of our spiritual soul work in these lifetimes is that we, as adults, get to separate out the messages we received about us from what's actually true for us. So coming back to Tom, yes, I think there's a place where in his psyche, he knows on some level this is a false message and he's pissed about it. And then I think there's a place in his psyche where he's actually internalized the message and believes there is something fundamentally wrong with him just for being who he is. And Kirsten spoke about this a bit in the last episode. She talked about his core shame just for being who he is. Okay, so that's kind of the initial framework. Tom, good boy, told he's bad. At that point, his energy splits. On the one hand, we have the current of energy that's pissed about this and wants to say, I'm not good, I'm bad. And then we got the other side of him where the energy splits, where the energy is saying, holy shit, I'm bad. I don't want to be bad. So let's follow that current of energy for a moment, because my sense of what happens for Tom in the place where young Tom internalizes this message that there's something fundamentally wrong or bad with him, my feeling is at this point, there is something in him that wants to then be good. Give me the love, give me the love, give me the love. Do you love me now? Do you love me now? I'll be good, I'll be good, I'll be good. Okay, I'll do whatever I need to do in this family system or in this culture to prove that I'm not actually the bad person that you all think I am. Okay, so this is the place where Tom starts to do quote unquote good things in order to get the love, in order to prove that he is not in fact bad. So this is where, in a way, Tom's good boy mask comes on. So let's just say, you know, if we sort of go with the example of Tom, who's sort of like, we've kind of touched on him on this podcast, again, as Dionysus, as like a magician, he's a performer, he likes to sing, he likes to dance, he likes to entertain the masses. It's almost like when he's young and he still believes he's good, Tom's doing his magic tricks, he's singing and he's dancing, and there's no agenda. He's just doing it because this is the energy that wants to move through his heart. And he's doing it as an honest offering of his expression of love. Then someone comes in, says, Tom, you're bad. There's something fundamentally wrong with you. Tom internalizes that. And so now, when he's going to do his good things, it's no longer just coming from a pure expression of his heart, even if he's doing the same things. Now it's coming from a place of, do you love me now? Do you love me now? I'll be good. I'll be good. I'll be good. Let me not sing, dance, and perform again from a place of just honest offering of my heart's expression. Let me sing, dance, and perform so you'll like me. Let me sing, dance, and perform so you'll see I'm good and not bad. Or, you know, maybe it's other things. Let me be the straight A student. Let me go do the newspaper route and earn money and contribute to the family income. Whatever it is I need to do, I'll do it so you'll see that I'm actually good and you'll give me the love that I crave. Now, this is where things start to get, again, sort of deliciously complex from my perspective. So you have Tom, again, on one side of the street, believing that he's fundamentally bad. So then he puts his good boy mask on in order to do all the right things, to get the love, to prove that he's not actually bad. And that might work. I mean, I think it does work for Tom. I mean, I think we've watched that play out. So much of the uproar around Scandoval was that he seemed comparatively good to a lot of the other guys on Vanderpump Rules. Like, he's very successful at being a good boy who knows how to get the fan favor, who knows how to get the love, right? So I imagine that Tom, from an early age, was successful at doing and saying all the right things to prove that he's good and to get the love. Here's where it gets tricky, though. And again, I'm smiling because I sort of love this. This, to me, is alchemy, and this is sort of the magical power of energy. And by the way, what I'm about to speak to is true law of attraction. So Tom is doing all the good things, singing and dancing to get the love. Maybe he even gets the love. The problem with this for Tom is that even though he might be receiving the quote unquote love that he has been seeking, it doesn't fully work because in his experience, the love that he is receiving is conditional on him doing and saying all the right things to get the love. Meaning, on some psyche level, Tom is aware that the love that he is getting feels conditional on him being good in a certain type of way that is based on the premise that there is something fundamentally bad about him. Meaning, Tom is not having an experience of receiving unconditional love for the simple truth of who he is. There's a story in his head that I have got to do all the right things and be the exact right person in order to be worthy of receiving love. So even though I'm getting a certain kind of external hit of validation and approval that my conscious mind might be interpreting as love, my psyche knows this feels on a certain level like self-betrayal. Because I'm accepting love on conditional terms where I have to have this good boy mask on. And again, that is inadvertently reinforcing the message that there is something fundamentally wrong with me. I don't get to be worthy of love just by virtue of being myself. I have to tap dance, I have to perform in order to get the love. Now, the reason why I'm saying all this, and the reason why I say this is where it gets complicated, is that awareness on the psyche level, that part of Tom that knows he's sort of keeping himself stuck in a cycle that reinforces this message that there's something fundamentally wrong with him, that is then going to feed and fuel that other channel of energy that is furious about this message. That other channel or current of energy that knows this isn't fair, this isn't right, the voice in him that's been saying all along, wait a second, this isn't right, there's nothing wrong with me. And I'm furious that I have to be trapped in this never-ending cycle of tap dancing and performing and doing all the good things to get the love and the approval. So this is what I'm saying about energy and alchemy. The more that Tom betrays himself to get a certain experience of what we might call love or conditional love, the more that he pretends to be this good boy who's worthy of receiving this conditional love, the more it inadvertently fuels the rage and resentment over being in this position in the first place. So the more that he invests energy into the good boy, the more he's also investing energy into his deep underground rage that is furious about this. Now, taking this to a next step, that underground rage is going to intensify and intensify, right? So let's just say, again, I'm not going too deeply into hypothetical examples of what could have or might have happened because again, my intention is just to keep this as simple as possible, but let's just say I've long felt like there may have been some issues with mom, right? So let's just say mom was a chief operator in conveying a message to Tom that there's something wrong with him. Tom might now have an underground resentment and hatred towards his mother. He loves her. He wants her love. But deep down, there's also this part of him that's saying, fuck you for making me wrong or bad. Again, we're speaking about the unconscious. So he's not going to be fully consciously aware of this, nor is he going to be fully consciously aware of his right to feel angry over this original message that he received, right? All Tom knows is there might be flashes or bursts or moments of deeply resenting his mother. That might flare up to the surface of hating his mother, of lashing out at his mother. Yeah, just like a burst of anger towards his mother. Again, as this anger intensifies, sometimes it's going to rise to the surface. And then that animosity, that underground resentment, that underground rage then becomes evidence in his mind of, oh shit, there really is something wrong with me. Oh shit, I really am a bad person inside. How can I feel this much rage and hatred towards, you know, my poor loving mother? I really am a horrible person. So now we've come back around to that core belief he internalized in the first place. Oh shit, I'm bad. Oh shit, there is something actually wrong with me, which then feeds back into the loop of, well, if there's something wrong with me, I better put on my good boy mask and do all the right things to prove I'm not angry. I'm not resentful. I'm not filled with hatred. Do you love me now? Do you love me now? And again, that feeds the story that there's something wrong with him, which then feeds the original anger, which then feeds the belief that there's something wrong with him, which then feeds the belief that he's got to put on his good boy mask to go out and tap dance. So do you see how there's like all these moving parts, and yet they all feed into each other and they all reinforce each other? So if I were to like broaden this out just a little bit more, and again, I'm almost hesitant to do this because, as I keep saying, I want to keep this as simple as possible. But it's almost like if we revisit that place where his underground anger, rage, and resentment gets fed by the part of him that thinks he needs to do all the right things to get some conditional love, it's almost like you can imagine that might be the part of him that wants to start doing naughty things, right? Because energy doesn't die. Like we can't just bypass energy. We can't just pretend it's not there. Energy is always going to live. So if there is an underground part of Tom that is furious about this unfair situation where he's been made wrong or bad somehow, that anger's got to go somewhere. So if on one hand, Tom's being the good boy who's singing and dancing, has the paper route, getting straight A's in school, do you love me now? Do you love me now? And that's feeding and fueling a more covert underground part of him that is fucking outraged about this bind that he's in. Well, that outrage has to have a place to go and to live. So that's where Tom might start getting secretly naughty. That might be where Tom secretly breaks curfew. That might be where Tom secretly cheats at school. That might be where Tom starts playing with matches in the backyard. It's his underground fuck you that's never been allowed to see the light of the day. It's the part of him that's saying, fuck all of you for putting me in this situation. So again, this is the angel and the devil. You got the good boy getting straight A's. Do you love me now? Do you love me now? You've got the bad seed playing with matches in the backyard saying, fuck all of you for putting me in this situation. Now, the reason why I'm saying this is you can probably imagine from the way I'm describing this, if Tom gets caught being naughty, cheating at school, playing with matches, or maybe stealing some bills from mom's purse, if he gets caught, and mom and dad or the principal or whomever says, Tom, what are you doing? How dare you do this? You can imagine, I would expect, that Tom's response to people finding out about his bad behavior and pointing a finger at him would be to feel very defensive. Because for the people outside of Tom, like his parents, they're just seeing the bad behavior as an isolated thing. That's all they're looking at. Tom, you cheated on your test. This is just categorically, undebatably wrong or bad. We want you to take responsibility for this. But for Tom, there is a much larger context to this. Again, unconscious mostly. It's the context of the psyche. It's the context of the unconscious. But there's a much larger context to this. And that's the voice in Tom, I believe, that's saying, but wait a second. Again, I'm not bad. Don't tell me I'm bad. I'm only doing these bad things because of the situation you put me in. Why do I have to answer for everything and you don't have to answer for what you did? So again, it's the voice that's coming from this core unconscious part of him that I think goes back to that original wound where he first got that message as a good little boy that there was something fundamentally wrong with him. And that's the place in an ideal world, where little Tom could have stood up and said, no, you're wrong. I'm not bad. Don't tell me I'm bad. I'm good. But of course, as a kid, Tom, well, first of all, he didn't have the awareness to say that. He also didn't have the space to say that. And so I feel like that's the deepest level of the voice that wants to come through him. And on some psyche level, Tom sort of knows and understands, I'm acting out because I never had space to claim my goodness. This is how my underground rightful rage is manifesting itself. And now you want to hold that against me? It's not fucking fair. So for Tom, you know, in this hypothetical situation where he's being called out for cheating on his test or playing with fire in the backyard, it's like, it's almost like if I take responsibility for this individual action, it almost feels like the deepest level of self-betrayal, because it almost feels like I'm conceding that there is something actually fundamentally wrong or bad about me. And I refuse to do that. I refuse to set myself up this way. Again, it's not fair that I have to answer for these actions when no one else has to answer for what they did to me that put me here in the first place. So I kind of just outline that little sort of hypothetical example because I'm sure you can feel the energetic parallels to what might be going on with Tom present day circumstance. Now, again, I'm gonna save how this plays out in present day for later, because that's where things get even more complicated. Because again, Tom is doing what we could call bad things. He is making actively destructive choices that are his to take responsibility for. So again, I want to save how this plays out and gets organized in his mind present day for a subsequent episode. I just wanted to take today to map out, again, my intuitive best guess, my best sense of what's sort of going on with this guy on a deeper level and the template that got set. So I think if I were just to sort of back off of this for one second and just look at this from a bigger picture. So yes, just to quickly review, Tom, good boy, gets told he's bad. His energy splits into two. On one side, he's furious about this wrongful message. There's a voice saying, I'm not bad, I'm good. On the other side is the part of him that's internalized the message that he's bad. As a result of internalizing that message, he tries to be the good boy who does all the right things to get the love. But by virtue of being that good boy, he feels he's betraying himself on a certain level. That self-betrayal fuels the rage around receiving this wrong message in the first place. That rage fuels the part of him that believes he's bad in the first place. And that belief in his badness then fuels the good boy who sings and dances and tap dances for the sake of getting the conditional love. So that's the merry-go-round we're on here. I'm sort of seeing it as like a pair of three spinning overlapping circles that just sort of feed and fuel one another. He's on a never-ending circular track, and his psyche is desperately trying to get out of it. And by the way, we all have a version of this. I mean, again, not as heightened and destructive as Tom necessarily, but again, I think this is the soul work that we all do in this lifetime. We all get set on certain self-fulfilling patterns that we unconsciously play out over and over, where we're spinning we're spinning in circles. And it's our spiritual task to get consciousness of these circles that we're in so we can essentially get off the ride, go back in time, reclaim something for ourselves, reclaim the truth of who we actually are, and then bring that to our adult awareness. And I really do believe that is the essence of the soul journey and how we actually learn the lessons that we're meant to learn in this lifetime. And I think Tom's inner work, and this is no small task, especially when you have started to accumulate actual destructive actions that have had a very destructive impact on other people. I think that Tom's work, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because I talked about how his energy kind of split into two separate channels. And it's almost like I see this potential process for him of holding two things at once. It's like returning to his original goodness deep down and reclaiming that for himself. Not needing anyone else's validation about that, but reclaiming it for himself while at the same time taking full responsibility for the destructive choices that he's made as an adult and what that would require. It's like that line needs to be, that power line, that energy power line needs to be cut, severed between the place in him that takes in the harmful things that he's done and then uses that as evidence as being a fundamentally bad, flawed person. And this is, you know, this is sophisticated stuff, you know, and I think this is the work in some ways we all have to do. I think Tom is in a very heightened level of it because, again, he's doing very heightened things, destructive things, but it's like the willingness to stand there and say, yes, I did something that was so destructive, so dishonest, so vindictive. I am willing to feel the impact it had on you, Ariana, my partner of 9 years. I am willing to feel this and to take this in. I am willing to be in my deep remorse. I am willing to be in my deep contrition. I am willing to claim my negative intention, and I'm willing to let you, Ariana, have your process. Meaning, Ariana might not be in a place where she's willing to forgive me now or even ever. Ariana might be furious and pissed at me till the end of time. And that's the price I pay. That is part of the price I pay for my destructive actions. I might not ever receive forgiveness. I might be shut out of this person's life forever. You do the crime, you do the time. That's part of self-responsibility. I surrender my control over the situation. It's not about me. This person who I've impacted is allowed to have their process, to have their boundaries, and I just got to roll with whatever comes my way now. This is just about my willingness to stand tall in what I've done. And again, take responsibility for what I've done, which is to simply show up and say, yes, I did this. Yes, I have remorse. Yes, I acknowledge it was destructive. Yes, I see and hear and feel your pain. Yes, I am sorry. And at the same time, in my own work, this is not none of Ariana's business. This is for me. In my own private work, I get to really look at where this came from in me, and I get to track my secret naughty side back to the root where my inner child at one point got hurt. And I get to claim the goodness of that inner child who got injured way before I started acting out, way before I started hurting other people. So I get to have full self-responsibility for my destructive actions and the bad things I've done. And I also get to hold space for the goodness of the boy I once was, and I get to reclaim that for myself. So I've already said more than I even intended to. Hopefully this is all clear. If it's not, let me know. More than ever, this is definitely an episode where I really welcome your questions. So feel free to DM me, feel free to email me. Let me know if this made sense. I hope it clarifies. Well, I know we haven't gotten to the present day yet, but I hope you can even start to feel how it maybe clarifies what's going on potentially in Tom on a psyche level. So, like I said, I've already said more than I intended to say. So, yeah, I will just leave that there for now. And like I said, this is part one of a two-part exploration. So this was about establishing the historical framework for this possible pattern in Tom. And I'm going to come back in a bit, and then in similarly simple language, hopefully, really dismantle how this then plays out in present day circumstances, like with Ariana, and hopefully from the vantage point of a similarly simple, clear explanation, really illustrate why it's so difficult and threatening for someone like Tom to take responsibility, for the truly destructive things that he is now doing as an adult. All right, you guys, as always, follow me on Instagram if you don't already, Jamie Stein, JAMIESTEIN. And a lot of you have been reaching out, inquiring about readings and sessions and things of that sort. So just to recap, I'm not currently doing individual or a la carte readings. I'm currently working with people on a deeper level. I'm offering what I call deep dive intensives, where essentially we do what I just did with Tom Sandoval, which is we use the current circumstances and dramas of your life to really dismantle the underlying pattern inside of you and to find out what are the lies that you got told about yourself, how to separate them out from the truth of yourself, and how to work with patterns so that any kind of unconscious blocks or perhaps destructive or self-destructive decisions you're making can be transmuted to work on behalf of your highest growth and transformation. It's literally helping people to go back and reclaim what needs and wants to be reclaimed in order to learn the lessons that they are here to learn in their particular lifetimes. So if that's something that sounds of interest to you, just head to the show notes for this episode. There's a link to a really brief application that you can send to me for the possibility of setting up just an informational call where we can get to know each other a little bit more and see if it's a mutual right fit. I'll also say, if you have submitted an application and haven't heard back from me yet, just know that I am getting through all the applications. I do work with just a limited number of people at one time so that everyone can get my optimal time, energy, and intention. So just know I have not forgotten about you. And on that note, if you are someone who has submitted an application and you are feeling really excited about this, you're feeling a real yes to it, you know, feel free to email me and let me know that you're really excited and ready. And also, if you haven't submitted an application yet, don't let what I'm saying deter you. It's my experience with this work that the right timing tends to reveal itself for everyone that I end up working with. So like I said, if you're feeling curious, if you're feeling an impulse around this, if you're feeling a yes to it, definitely go to the show notes, submit an application, and then you will hear from me in the right timing. All right, everyone, that's it for now. As always, thank you for being here, and I will see you on the flip side. Bye.